Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, the pinnacle of militant moderation, where we live by Alan's sacred mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Be sure to check out our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our showtimes. Well, the latest scandal to blow up around the Trump administration, manufactured in the media, blown up into an overnight sensation, is the story of the luxury aircraft from Qatar, the new Air Force One that Qatar is going to give Donald Trump. Supposedly, this plane is basically a flying gold brick. It's like a giant bribe that they're giving Trump, and Trump is just going to take it. And they're trying to make a huge scandal out of this. And it's a bold move. You know, on the Democrats' part, it's a risky move on the Democrats' part to focus so heavily on this, because this reminds me a lot of what happened when they tried to make the Maryland man their focus, this illegal alien gangster that the Democrat Party fell in love with and suddenly decided was the most important man who ever lived, and nothing had to be spared, no effort could be spared to keep this guy in the United States, to fly him home after he got deported. And they looked ridiculous. I mean, it blew up in their faces. The Democrats wound up looking like the political wing of a terrorist organization, pleading to get this guy back. And every day there was a new revelation about the Maryland man that made the story look worse and worse and worse for the Democrats. Every day there was a new folder that came out, a new file came to light, a new charge in his past. He beat his wife. He was involved in human smuggling. It just got worse and worse for them with every passing day. And now you don't hear much about the Maryland man anymore. And that wasn't working for him. So here comes Planegate, Trump and the Air Force 747 Air Force One that Qatar is going to give him to be the new Air Force One. And this is supposed to be this gigantic scandal. But again, I don't think it's going to click very well. For one thing, I don't know that most of the public cares about it all that much. It's not a spectacular story. It has no deeper meaning. There's no narrative around it. They're trying to build one by saying that Trump is just like corrupt and he's taking gifts. That is a tough thing to peddle after you just had the Biden family in the White House. I mean, Democrats all think we have the memories of cicadas, but we don't. And we all remember the Biden family profiteering like mad, selling Joe Biden's influence. They're broke now, by the way. If you've been watching the news, the Biden family is screaming poverty because now that they don't have influence to sell anymore, they have no business model and nobody's interested in hiring Hunter Biden. All of a sudden, nobody wants to pay $1 million for a piece of canvas that Hunter Biden dribbled some paint on. Whereas the day before yesterday, he was the most successful American artist of his time. It's just incredible to watch. So they're going to try to saddle Trump with some kind of corruption rap on this. And that's just tough when you're the party of Joe Biden. That's just not going to fly. But the other problem for the Democrats here is that there is kind of an interesting story behind why Air Force One is in rough shape. And it's not good for Democrats. This is not good for organized labor. It's not good for DEI. I mean, those are big parts of the reasons why there is no Air Force One. So to put this all in perspective, Air Force One, the most fabled plane in the world, it's a 747. And the one that's flying around right now has been going since the 1980s. It's a really old plane. Obviously, it's tip-top maintenance. It's Air Force One. But it's a very old aircraft. There was supposed to be a new aircraft, a new Air Force One, that was supposed to be delivered by Boeing. And that was supposed to have happened years ago. And they're way behind schedule on coughing up this plane. Now, during the first Trump administration, President Trump, the first time he was in the White House, he didn't like the Boeing deal too much, so he renegotiated it. He took a look at the contract. He said they were charging too much. Some things happened behind the scenes. But the delivery schedule was still pretty airtight at that time. And they were supposed to bring this plane up sometime during Joe Biden's presidency. Didn't happen. So still no Air Force One. And Joe Biden, you know, his administration of all-star incompetence did absolutely nothing about this problem. They just left it lie there like so much else. They just ignored it. And here we are, and Air Force One is continuing to get older. So the Qataris have stepped in and offered a plane that could be used. It will not be Donald Trump's plane. It would be given to the Department of Defense, as is appropriate for Air Force One. They take care of it. And then part of the deal, supposedly, is that once they no longer need this plane, then it could be gifted to Trump's foundation, his presidential foundation, or something like that. But it's not, you know, going to be parked in his driveway. Let's put it that way. It's not going to be parked outside the house for Trump to hop in and take on joyrides whenever he wants. And in the meantime, that plane would belong to the DOD. And it wouldn't exactly be free. Now, Trump was laughing about this with reporters and saying, I'd be a fool not to take a free airplane, you know, from Qatar. There's still a lot of money that goes into this because it has to be renovated, refurbished, updated, and so forth to be Air Force One quality. So it's not exactly a free plane, but it would definitely save a lot of money to take this plane from Qatar. And the only reason it's necessary is because Boeing, long ago, for a variety of reasons, just became incapable of delivering airplanes on time. And that is the real story here. And like I said, this is going to blow up like the Marilyn Man. This is not a story the Democratic Party really wants the American people to ponder at length, because the reasons why Boeing is so far behind schedule include things like it's a fusion with the government. It lives on government contracts, so it's gotten very lazy. It just thinks it gets infinite free money from the government all the time. No performance pressure there. DEI, big factor here. Boeing was all in on diversity, equity, and inclusion. And that, as it does with every business that embraces that poison of DEI, that definitely interfered with its productivity and its ability to compete. So that was a big problem for Boeing. And organized labor. Big part of the reason why Boeing can't deliver this plane. Boeing has these contracts with organized labor that restrict where it can build aircraft, even though it would make much more sense for it to open new facilities in labor-friendly states, meaning, you know, states that aren't unionized and can have cheaper labor. Their agreement with unions forbids them from doing that, so that's one of the reasons they take so long to deliver. I mean, none of this is going to sound good to the American people the more they hear about this story, and it all reflects very poorly on the way the Democratic Party insists we have to do things. They're supposedly the party of organized labor. They'd move heaven and earth to protect the union business model and keep unions rich and their coffers stuffed with loot. And the unions reward Democrats for this by organizing on their behalf. That's not an arrangement I think anybody in the Democratic Party really wants the American public to ponder at any great length. We already know the American people have had it up to here with DEI. And here's another story of how it's toxic and it poisons businesses at a time of great global competitiveness. You remember the whole story of the tariffs in China and whatever's going on there is all about America trying to compete on the world stage and win back manufacturing. We lost all our manufacturing to China and other countries after the 2000s, and we're trying to get this all back. And you can't get manufacturing back if your labor is crippled with ideological crap and you can't build a factory because of environmental regulations, and you have to have DEI and all this stuff, and other countries don't. Other countries just run out there and produce, and they're beating the pants off us. For that reason, the cost per product is so high with American industry because of all the government-imposed costs that have been added to it. And here is another story of a great American company, Boeing, one of the most important companies in history, you know, by any objective standard, and they've been reduced to not being able to deliver Air Force One, of all things. I mean, you'd think that would be the biggest order on the plate, right? But they can't deliver Air Force One on time because they've been crippled by all these other factors. They can't compete. And I guarantee you that there are plenty of manufacturers out there who don't have those problems that are going to start beating our pants off, already are, on productivity and quality and delivery because they don't have to put up with the nonsense that American corporations do. Here's another great example that's been in the news quite a bit lately, South Korea. South Korea, you know, you think of electronics and so on with them because they're successful there, but South Korea has turned into one of the great arms exporters in the world, and they're starting to gobble up contracts that would have normally gone to American companies. And one of the reasons is, besides they're very productive and they sell cheaper that American products sell for. But another reason they're so successful is that all of South Korea's military hardware is interoperable with American hardware, because that's what they've got. For all these decades, we've been protecting them. So everything South Korea does from a defense standpoint has to be 100% compatible with American military hardware. And they kind of realized one day that means we can make stuff that works great with American hardware and sell it for a fraction of what American companies are selling it for and market it to everybody who's been buying American military hardware all this time. And they're doing great. They're having great success at doing this. So the Boeing story, the Air Force One Qatar story, is really a story about American corporate power diminishing, our productivity going away as our corporations become hyper-politicized, controlled by the government, involved in politics, fusing with the government, and becoming increasingly useless. We live in a world where nothing works anymore, and that's what has to change if we're going to compete. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
It's no secret that everyone wants to live a healthier life, but how many of us really do what it takes to make that happen? A new book lays out easy steps you can take to bring you closer to that goal. Dr. Brian Clement is the author of Quantum Human, an easy-to-read guide to wellness that provides a historic and scientifically validated roadmap on how to stop aging, prevent disease, and getting the most out of life.
Our many years of research have led us to realize how important it is to pay attention to our foods, our thoughts, and the activities we participate in. And more important is our relationships and sense of community.
Dr. Clement's message is one of empowerment. He says that each of us can harness energy and raise our biofrequency through conscious actions. And by doing so, we can heal ourselves and contribute to a more harmonious and connected world.
It's no mystery in Quantum Human we have explored the science of energy healing and the human potential and show how everyone can improve their lives and take their health back.
For more information, visit BrianClementPhD.com.
It's been 5 years since the COVID-19 pandemic began, yet nurses continue to face significant stress and burnout. Brendan Martin, Research Director for the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, or NCSBN, has more.
The nursing community is facing persistent challenges, with nurses continuing to leave the field in record numbers. In fact, our 2024 National Nursing Workforce Study finds nearly 2 in 5 nurses plan to leave the profession by 2029.
More than 138,000 nurses left the profession since 2022, and a lot more nurses intend to leave the field within the next 5 years. Nurses face similar challenges across all levels and experience.
40% of nurses expressed that stress and burnout are among the top reasons for considering a job change. They also mentioned heavy workloads, understaffing, and feeling underpaid contributed to their desire to leave.
For more information on the National Council of State Boards of Nursing 2024 Workforce Study, visit ncsbn.org/workforce.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUS Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, in all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. The latest inflation report is in. Inflation is down again. The Consumer Price Index is decreasing for the third month in a row, which is obviously good news politically for President Trump, good news for American consumers, and a little troubling for those who told us high inflation wasn't Joe Biden's fault and it was here to stay forever. Here with us to talk about it is Kenner Lee Davis, conservative commentator, former deputy attorney general for the Commonwealth of Virginia, and author of the book Revolution, A Call to Turn Back the Lawless Left and Restore the Promise of America. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Well, John, it's great to be with you.
I saw President Trump announced these new inflation numbers by putting out a message on social media where he said, inflation is down again, love you, or something like that, you know, just kind of tipping his cap to everybody. And this jaunty attitude is so different than the sour defeatism we got during the Biden years. They told us high inflation is forever. It's not his fault. It's none of his policies. It's just the way it is. And we should all be happy, they told us, to pay $4,000 more a year in inflation costs to have the magnificent Biden presidency. And here comes Trump, and inflation's whipped in 3 months flat.
Yeah, they must be tying themselves in knots, trying to come up with the latest attack strategy, whether it's lawfare or, in the case of tariffs and the economy and inflation, of course, right out of the gate, even before Liberation Day on the 2nd of April, right out of the gate, the predictable left-wing legacy, so-called progressive, really regressive media, has predicted with certainty that everything would go wrong and prices would go up, and certainly they would skyrocket as a result of tariffs and all the awful dislocations. But no, no, no. The headline on the inflation report could be latest legacy media left-wing propaganda campaign fails again. The monthly numbers were much cooler, much below what had been predicted by the so-called expert economists. 2.3% for the year also was the lowest annual rate since February 21, when we were still in the midst of the pandemic, and the lowest in years and years. This is true for the monthly figures also for CPI generally and the core prices. Energy, a very important part of what we consume, was down 3.7% for the year. And get this, gasoline, which we need for our cars because there's no more EV mandate, gasoline is down 11.8% for the year.
As we've all learned, I mean, energy affects the cost of everything. So you bring energy down that much, and you're going to experience a benefit across the board, just like soaring energy costs will make it worse across the board. But I think we could all agree that inflation is still too darn high. It's beating expectations, but it isn't eliminated as a problem right now. We would like to get back to where we were during the first Trump administration. What needs to be done to get those consumer prices way down in a way that people will really feel in their wallets?
Well, they need to press and press and keep pressing forward with the bold, visionary campaign that's underway for deregulation, for repealing, rescinding, eliminating all of the onerous, intrusive, and unnecessary restrictive regulations that were put in place all through the Biden administration. The president has been just historic in his attack on the administrative state and his counterattack against Biden's regulations that constituted a war on household appliances and energy. That's what they need to keep doing, because inflation is always and everywhere the result of a combination of restricted supply and too much money, which drives up demand.
Too much money, definitely. Big problem, big too much government spending, too much of a burden. And I mentioned before the break that Trump said when he brought these tariffs into play that one of his big goals was to bring manufacturing back to the United States on a major scale. And you can't do that when the situation you just described exists, when regulation is titanic, the regulatory burden unbelievable on labor, on construction, when it can take you years to get the permits to build something. You're never going to get manufacturing to come back to America with any level of tariffs under that kind of a condition.
That's exactly right. Reshoring depends on deregulation. And so we're really headed in the right direction. Oh, one other specific figure, eggs were a big issue recently, again, in the sky is falling left-wing press. And the prices had been going up, but for this last month, egg prices were down almost 13%. And that's a result of sensible initiatives undertaken by the Trump Agriculture Department to repopulate the laying hen population and look at other regulations and restrictions, because that's what drives up the cost of every product.
The egg panic, that was mostly February, I guess, when the egg panic was a big deal. And they were trying to make a big story about how eggs were getting more expensive under Trump thing. But the reason the eggs were expensive is that they killed all the hens because they had a disease outbreak among the hens. And that naturally made the egg supply dry up for a while. And to the surprise of no one who was thinking rationally about this, they repopulated the laying hens. The eggs came back. The prices are going down. So it's a great example of a manufactured panic that had nothing to do with any particular policy of Trump's, but arguably of Biden's. If you disagree that killing the chickens was a good idea, it was Biden that caused that.
Well, the left lives by narratives. It's sort of a corollary of their addiction to ideology. And so they look at any problem, any situation, any condition, not to try to understand what's really going on and offer constructive responses and comments. No, they look at any situation and see how they can cram it into their pre-existing state expansionist narrative. And but the reality keeps derailing their efforts in these, at least in these first days of the Trump administration.
Now, status politics in general are a perpetual war on the laws of supply and demand, a promise that we can just wave a magic wand and make supply and demand not matter anymore, and it never works. You can spend a lot of money creating the illusion that it worked, but eventually that illusion pops, and I think the inflation of the Biden years was a wake-up call for a lot of people that this just can't go on forever. Kennerly Davis, conservative commentator, former deputy attorney general for the Commonwealth of Virginia, and author of the book Revolution, A Call to Turn Back the Lawless Left and Restore the Promise of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward. We'll be right back.
So Zuzu is the story of an adorable hermit crab that actually mistakes a piece of plastic for its shell. There's a short film on joinzuzu.com that is this extraordinary short film about Zuzu's story. But also there's a petition online where people can go and easily, in just moments, sign this petition to advocate for federal EPR legislation. This is so important because this allows us to create a national strategy of collective action to scale up a solution to fix the recycling problem in this country. So I partnered with S.E. Johnson on the Zuzu movement because S.E. Johnson is one of those rare companies that is out at the forefront of this issue and pushing to recognize that companies have a responsibility to play in the system. It's not just about consumers recycling. companies and the products that they create need to be recyclable. They need to take responsibility for the life cycle of those products, and that's what SC Johnson is doing. And for more information, go to joinzuzu.com and sign the petition.
The fan favorite series Leverage Redemption returns for its third season April 17th on Prime Video. The show follows a team of reformed criminals who prove sometimes it's good to be bad as they use their less than legal skills to help those in need fight back against the rich and powerful. In season 3, the team pits themselves against a power broker stealing the town's clean water, a pool hustler with a side business in international extortion, and a corrupt mayor who's the judge and jury of his small town, all while dodging a plan of vengeance from a past enemy. But no matter what, when someone needs help, they provide the leverage. Elise Shannon plays Brianna Casey, a brilliant engineer and hacker.
Audiences will love this new season. It's filled with big surprises, major action, lots of humor, and as always, a lot of heart. My character Brianna is still learning about the world of cons, but she brings her own spin to everything. Snarky humor, it's high tech, and she helps the team stop some truly awful people.
Don't miss Leverage Redemption, April 17th on Prime Video.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
This forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News, your guest host today. A new Heartland Rasmussen poll shows a plurality of Democrats, hopes that Donald Trump loses the trade war, which means, in essence, they're rooting for the United States to lose the trade war. Here with us to talk about it is Chris Talgo, Senior Editor and Research Fellow for the Stopping Socialism Project at the Heartland Institute. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Hey, it's great to be here.
It seems to me like it's one thing to criticize the trade war policy or wish that Trump hadn't done it or oppose it before he does it in that context. But to go into pollsters and say, I hope he loses, means you're hoping the United States gets creamed here. You know, that seems like an odd attitude for the public to take. We're not talking Democrat politicians here. This is the public responding to a poll.
It is a very odd stance to take, and I can't help but wonder if it's strictly due to the fact that these people are reflexively opposing anything that Donald Trump does. So Donald Trump wants the United States to win the trade war with China, so then they want China to win. Donald Trump wants men out of women's sports, they want men in women's sports. Donald Trump wants to get illegal immigrant, gang members out of the United States. They want to defend it. So I think there's a part of that, but I also think that there's a big part of the fact that many Democrats, many self-identified liberals these days are anti-American.
Well, that's really what it gets down to here, because I think when I say they're rooting against America, some people who are of a more moderate type of bent will say, no way, they wouldn't do that. You don't know very many liberals if you think they would never root against America. Some of them are deeply anti-American and invested in a narrative of American failure. They don't like this country. They don't like its history. They think that they and their politicians can build something better in its place. But before that can happen, the country as it exists today has to be defeated.
Exactly. It has to fail. And it has to fail, I think, mostly on in the economic realm. So that's why I think that they are so hell-bent on trying to do anything in their power to cause this, economic implosion. And if that means, China winning a trade war with the United States, well, then so be it in their minds.
Well, this is something I've been marveling at ever since the rise of the electric vehicle and green energy and all that, is that China is getting filthy rich off all that stuff. And they provide so many of the materials for solar power and EVs through strip mining and slave labor. And the people who are supporting all of this will tell you they're the most virtuous people on earth, and they look down their nose at America. But then they turn around and deal with this authoritarian slave-taking regime without batting an eye.
Oh, that is such a good point. Not only are these Democrat leaders and these so-called green energy advocates talking about how we need to completely change our grid and become totally dependent upon renewables, which means that we would become totally dependent upon China, but they also, I think, fail to understand that the United States has become too dependent upon China in many other economic fields, and we saw this during the pandemic. And instead of, these people coming out and saying, you know what, we want to make sure that the United States is independent and that we can, have our national security, not have to depend on China for, precious minerals and other things, they're just going in the opposite direction. So it's sad to see it.
Well, what do you think about the current state of the trade war with China? Because there was something of a truce announced over the weekend. A deal was struck. Tariffs were lowered. President Trump, the White House, touted this as a massive victory. His critics say, no, it was an embarrassing defeat. You've retreated. You got nothing. And you're right back where you started after inflicting billions of dollars through tariffs.
Well, I think that that's a very short-sighted view. And I think that what Donald Trump tried to do in his first term, and I think that he was somewhat successful, was to, put in an entirely new paradigm in the China trade relationship. And during the Biden years, that completely fell apart because Biden did not ensure that China was abiding by those rules. So Donald Trump comes back into the presidency and automatically he says, you know what, I'm going to play hardball. I'm going to bring you to the negotiating table. And I think that China did blink. I think that it's very obvious that China depends on our market much more than we depend on their market. And I think that Donald Trump is using that leverage. And also, I think that China has been so guilty of stealing our intellectual property, of just really not engaging in fair and free trade. And we have helped propel China into a very powerful position, and we've got nothing to show for it. So I think this is a long overdue endeavor, and I am extremely happy that President Trump is doing this, and I feel that all the Americans should support this.
I was watching for signals out of China for how this is all going, because you can't really trust anything their government or their state media says. And it certainly looked like, from all indications, they were having the worst of it.
in this trade war to date by quite a margin. There were workers marching in the streets, mm-hmm. demanding unpaid wages. I mean, virtual riots were happening across the country. Chinese export companies were shrugging and saying, well, we're done. If these tariffs stay in place, we're out of business. And China, being an almost entirely export-based manufacturing economy, just can't take that. You know, they couldn't find any alternative markets. They were never going to be able to come back to their power without the United States as a country. And over here, it seemed like the response to the tariffs was not as bad as had been feared. Inflation is doing okay. The new reports are encouraging. Nobody was really hurting in a big way, except a couple of specific industries would complain about it. So it seemed like Trump was in pretty good shape to keep the pressure on. And instead, they struck this 90-day deal to let all the tariffs down and to work something out better.
I think that Donald Trump is a master negotiator. I think that he understood, right off the bat, that he would have to come in and he would have to really raise the tariffs on China to show them that we mean business. And like you said, I think the American people generally support this. And I think the American people understand that this offshoring and this globalism that we've been pursuing for the past 30, 40 years has not worked out well. It has backfired. It has, just decimated the working class and, industrial, Rust Belt area. And you know what? I think Americans are sick and tired of, buying cheap junk from China. And, the United States actually needs to become a manufacturing, power again. And this is common sense. This is what we need to be doing to protect our national security.
Well, if Trump has begun the conversation about reshoring, and there are some encouraging early developments along those lines, if we're going to get really serious about that, we're going to have to change the regulatory environment in the United States that makes labor and construction ridiculously expensive. Production is incredibly expensive. Getting the permits to build anything is nigh impossible in some districts. You are never going to reshore in a big way and start reversing the damage from letting China into the picture until you can make a much more business-friendly regulatory environment. And that's going to take some big changes.
Yeah, and that is a crucial point. And thank you for bringing that up, because Donald Trump, in his first term, he said for every new regulation, we're going to get rid of a bunch of ones that are currently on the books. And he's taken that to a whole new level in his second term, where he's saying for every new regulation that is going to be passed, we're going to get rid of 10 ones that don't need to be on the books anymore. So you're totally right. These anti manufacturing, environmental, and other regulations have not worked out very well for the United States, and we definitely need to get to a environment where we are incentivizing American manufacturing to come back to the United States. And I think that we've been seeing that, especially in some of the southern states, because they do have right to work. They are more friendly to manufacturers coming in and setting up shop, and then we see them leaving states like California. So I think that the states like Texas, South Carolina, other states in the South in particular, are really trying to do everything that they can to bring those jobs back here. And a lot of that does have to do with tax policies. A lot of it has to do with regulatory policies, like you just said. And some of that can be done at the federal level, but a lot of it can also happen at the state level.
One of the other fronts in the trade war that's been of great interest, because it's so close to home, is Canada, and no one can really figure out what's going on with Canada. It's been a strange battle that we've been fighting with them ever since Trump returned to office. He did kind of go out of his way to antagonize their former prime minister and the Canadian government in a lot of ways. They didn't like it very much. The elections happened, the Liberal Party remained in power, and then the Canadian Liberal prime minister shows up for a meeting with Trump and all but turns into his lapdog, like not at all the pugnacious meeting that I think Canadians were expecting. So where do we stand with Canada? Is that all? Does that all just look a lot worse than it actually is? Or is there a serious breach in the U.S.-Canada trade relationship?
I think a lot of that is just the media trying to, make something out of nothing. I think that the United States and China and Canada have a very good relationship that goes back a very long time. I think that we are going to, continue to have this sort of relationship with Canada for years to come into the future. And I do not think that Canada should be treated as an adversary or an enemy. Unlike China, I think that we have much in common with Canada, and I feel like we should have some sort of economic union with them.
Well, of course, I guess part of the problem is that Trump wants to not treat them as an enemy. He wants to treat them as another state, and they didn't take that very well. So I'm not sure we're going to get Canada. We might get Alberta. I guess we'll have to see how that works out, because Alberta is looking pretty feisty these days. But that story remains to be told. Chris Talgo, Senior Editor and Research Fellow for the Stopping Socialism Project of the Heartland Institute. Thanks for joining us today. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor of Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
A new national survey reveals a surprising gap between what Americans believe about dental care and what they actually do. Many say they want to keep their natural teeth for life, but their habits often don't match that goal. Dr. Stephen Katz, president of the American Association of Endodontists, explains.
Most adults say they care about keeping their natural teeth, and nearly 9 in 10 believe flossing is important. But almost 60% don't floss daily, and more than 2 in 5 wait to see a dentist until they're already in pain. These delays can lead to serious dental problems.
Tooth pain doesn't have to mean tooth loss. When problems do arise, there's hope and help from a dental specialist known as an endodontist to help save your natural teeth.
That's correct. Endodontists are specialists in saving natural teeth through root canal therapy. With the right care, even a tooth that hurts or is infected can frequently be saved. But the key is acting early. Don't wait for pain.
Learn more at findmyendodontist.com. A new AARP fraud report highlights the need for better cybersecurity habits. Kathy Stokes is the director of fraud prevention programs with AARP's Fraud Watch Network.
Fraud is becoming increasingly sophisticated, yet many Americans may still be unaware of habits that can decrease their risk. Now, millions of adults have downloaded unverified apps, or they've taken social media quizzes from questionable sources, and millions have yet to enable multi-factor authentication, which is an easy step that offers additional protection for online accounts.
The good news is that protecting yourself doesn't require a tech background.
Simple steps like updating your passwords, using a VPN on public Wi-Fi, and turning on security features can help keep your information safe.
For more on how to protect yourself from the latest scams, visit AARP.org/Fraud Watch Network. That's AARP.org/Fraud Watch Network.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Are you excited about being a new grandmother?
Of course I am. A little intimidated, too.
Why?
Taking care of a baby today is so different than when I had you.
But, Mom, you did great with me.
Thanks, son. But I put you on your stomach to sleep.
Right. But now we know that babies should always be placed on their backs to sleep, for naps and at night, to reduce the risk of sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS.
Hmm. You also slept with blankets and toys in your crib.
True. But now we know to keep everything out of the crib except for my sweet baby girl. No blankets, pillows, or other soft or loose items.
Daddy's going to teach Nana all the ways to keep you safe while you sleep. Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
For more tips on safe sleep for babies, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. That's safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. The biggest story in environmentalism is one that you probably haven't been hearing much about because it's a bit awkward for the climate change movement. Antarctic sea ice, which has been shrinking, or supposedly was shrinking, for many years and was one of the indisputable harbingers of doom cited by the climate change movement, is actually growing now. The Antarctic is packing on ice. The trend is reversed, and it actually started about 4 years ago, according to the latest measurements. This is an interesting discovery because it puts a lot of pressure on climate change folks to begin explaining how this could possibly happen. Here with us to talk about it is Dr. Bonner Cohen, Senior Policy Analyst for the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
I mean, this is a huge deal. We've been told for years that the shrinking polar ice caps were the trump card, if you will, of the climate movement, and that was absolute proof that the climate was changing in a bad way, human beings are responsible, and you can't deny it anymore. And now we find out that starting 4 years ago, the Antarctic ice cap began growing, and they just have no explanation for it. It's like the whole climate movement is sitting there in shock.
That's right, and that just shows you how ill-informed these people are. If you take a long, hard look at the climatological history of planet Earth, you will discover, among other things, that Antarctic ice, as well as polar ice, expands and it contracts for reasons we don't always understand. In this case, there are two fascinating things. On the eastern part of the Antarctica, there's been an extraordinary amount of snow, and that snow has piled up along with the incredibly cold temperatures that exist down there. And bingo! All of a sudden, the ice cover and Antarctica is expanding, just as in the past it has periodically contracted. In the western part of the Antarctica, you may have read a more alarmist news in the not-too-distant past that the ice cover there was shrinking. Was that the result of warmer temperatures brought about by human-induced climate change? No. It had to do with undersea volcanisms. There are volcanoes off the western coast of Australia, and volcanoes every now and then blow their top, okay? And when they do, they put heat into the water, and as a result, the Antarctic ice sheet there shrinks. These are perfectly natural processes. They have been going on since time immemorial. But you're quite right. This does put the lie, or I'd rather say yet another lie, to the whole narrative of the great climate crisis. There is no climate crisis, but there is a crisis of confidence that people should have in attributing more and more credibility to the people who consistently get things wrong.
I love how the UK Daily Mail reported this, quite typical of the organizations that have bothered to cover it. Their headline was, "Shocking Antarctica Discovery Sends Climate Change Deniers into Mass Celebration." And reading what happened, I thought, shouldn't we all be mass celebrating? Because it means the ice is getting bigger. That's good, isn't it? How can this be spun into bad news because it's going to help people that the Daily Mail doesn't like, you know, or the climate changers don't like? Shouldn't we all be delighted that the Antarctic ice is increasing?
Yes, but you see, it was bad news for the climate alarmist and their enablers in the media. Bad news sells, and it travels fast, and these people have into the whole narrative of man-made global warming. Well, it turns out there's no there there. There is, in fact, no climate crisis. There is, however, a crisis, and that's one that we can see. We saw recently in Spain and Portugal, a country that, in the name of combating climate change, became so dependent on solar power for its electricity that they had a massive blackout beginning in Spain. It spread to Portugal and even into France. That is the future we are all going to experience if we continue to follow the advice and so-called wise counsel of those people who really don't know what they're doing, but occasionally are in positions of power where they can impose their will on us to the detriment of all of us.
It seems to me that all this changed in a big way right around 2020, coincidentally, I think around the time of the pandemic, because it was no longer possible to pretend that only minor changes would be needed to comport with climate change ideology. They would tell you that there's this huge crisis, it's going to wipe out the world, and it's all your fault, and all we need you to do is stop using the old kind of light bulb, you know, and maybe buy a few electric cars, and everything will be okay. And around 2020, that was no longer an operable talking point. So they had to start saying, no, what we really mean is you have to live in the dark. You have to have solar panel and deal with rolling blackouts, and you have to all give up your cars because not everybody can have an electric car. So the real cost of meeting something like the Paris Climate Agreement is now impossible to disguise, and that is causing some big second thoughts around the world about sticking with this program.
Yes, it is. I think we have reached the point where we can say we have reached peak green. Now we are seeing with our own eyes the consequences of enacting these policies, the consequences for ordinary people of enacting these policies that tell us which cars we can buy, which appliances we can have in our homes, be they dishwashers, washing machines, furnaces, and what have you. The micromanagement here, which simply puts an enormous amount of power into the hands of an incredibly small number of people and no small amount of money into the purveyors of the politically fashionable appliances and other green materials, this was a giant climate cartel. But you can only get away with that for so long. Sooner or later, you have to deal with the consequences of that when those consequences can no longer be overlooked.
And I can't help but notice that some of the things demanded by climate alarmists are actually pretty harmful to the environment in a variety of other ways, like solar panels degrading and dropping minerals into the soil, or the things that have to be done in order to mine lithium on a titanic scale to make batteries. All that sort of thing has tremendous environmental costs, windmills killing animals. And all of those costs have been ignored in the mad dash to make the climate the number one concern. But I think some other environmentalists are beginning to rumble that this is not something they're comfortable with because of what it's doing to the environment in countless other ways.
Yeah, there is. I would still say it's a fringe element of the environmental movement that's beginning to recognize that this may not be the road that they want to go down. But I think you'll see the core environmentalists, they're not going to give this up anytime soon. So we had best stay on our guard. These people who want to micromanage our lives are not going to go away.
Dr. Bonner Cohen, Senior Policy Analyst for the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor of Breitbart News. Thanks, everyone, for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.